You let one ant stand up to us, then they all might stand up. Those puny little ants outnumber us 100 to 1. And if they ever figure that out, there goes our way of life. It's not about food. It's about keeping those ants in line. That's why we're going back. Does anybody else want to stay? Let's ride!
Feeling spooky tonight. Feeling very, very seance-y. So I'm taking my favorite seance music. And what are we going to talk about? What are we going to talk about tonight? We got a few things to talk about. First thing, Johnny Broom in the chat room says dick's out for Harambe. I got to say something about that. Usually I'm just a silent observer for everything that gets memed and everything that gets turned into some, you know, really key piece of the fabric, woven into the very fabric of internet culture and subcultures. So I'm always a very distant observer. You know, obviously we covered the Harambe story here, and seeing what it turned into was hilarious. And sometimes it's just weird. I think what's funny about it is just weird. The over attention, too much attention paid to a certain subject is funny in itself. When you make a mountain out of a molehill, I think that's hilarious. And I guess that's why it just goes so far. But I was training a client of mine today, and I've been training this kid since he was 6 years old. Okay, I think he's 14 now. I've known him since he was six. He had a lot of balance issues, low core strength, so he was falling a lot, and that's how I met him, you know, through a friend of a friend, and there you go. So he, all these years later, you know, now most of the training is strength conditioning, and we do a lot of baseball and all that stuff. Big kid, and he comes up to me right as we end our session today, and he goes, hey, you know what Harambe is? I said, what, you got your dick out for him too? And he said, oh, you know? I said, dude, I know what time of day it is. I said, I don't really like Facebook, you know? I hang out on places like Tumblr. That's like, you know, those really dingy apartment parties. That's where all the shit starts. You want to figure out where the ringworm starts? Tumblr's the bathhouse. Tumblr's the bathhouse that all of the meme ringworm starts. Or at least it evolves. Quite popular. So that was funny. That was my little Harambe run-in today. So if you don't know what I'm talking about, it's the fucking gorilla. Everybody's taking their dicks out for him now. And it's like a tribute. It's like some sort of a 21st century showing of solidarity. You know, usually even just 10 years back, you would just give somebody a fist pump. You bump forearms, you high five, low five, cowabunga stuff. It goes longer, 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 whatever. 21st century, everybody takes their erections out for each other just to show them, you know, live strong. But in 10 minutes, I'm going to call up Alex Plitzis. And tonight, we're going to have Alex on the show because of the subject of his latest article for the IJ Review. And I got to tell you, This is some interesting stuff. Now, you guys know what's going on right now. If you don't know, the president has been under the microscope the last couple days. He and Josh Earnest are doing their Orwellian doublespeak to get around, you know, what they're doing, what they didn't do with this cast drop-off in Iran that, you know, mysteriously aligns with the releasing of our prisoners, of our detainees over there. American detainees that were released. And whether or not it is a open cash transaction for the release of hostages and prisoners, it looks that way. And it's just another terribly handled thing by a guy who I would have to imagine is just about capable to run a local YMCA. I've worked in YMCAs before. I spent a lot of time at one. I know what the administration is like. I know what they concern themselves with. I know how they handle problems, and I know how they're usually in over their heads. Because I hate to say it, because it's just, you know, I met some great people, and there have been diamonds in the rough. But for the most part, the people that I have seen running either departments or the entire goddamn show in organizations like the YMCAs, they're like the people who couldn't have cut it in corporate America. So they're given a full-time job salary to wring their hands over what to call the new health initiative so it doesn't sound threatening or it doesn't sound intimidating. I shit you not. The last couple of months before I left one YMCA, the last YMCA that I finally said, okay, I have enough personal clients where I'm going to just train privately and I don't need a gym. Well, that's not even it. I completely forgot the real reason why. There was no reason for me to stay at the YMCA anymore because the YMCA actually did provide part-time medical coverage for employees who were not full-time, obviously, part-time coverage. In either case, for a kid in my 20s, and even now I would have been fine with it, I would have still been there, it was good insurance. It was, I think it had some hospital indemnity, like emergency room care, preventative care. I can see my physician for a yearly physical and stuff like that. Didn't have dental or anything like that. But once the ACA was introduced into law, Aetna got rid of part-time coverage for the organizations that were taking part in those plans. So I was paying about maybe $130 a month or less, maybe $120 a month for the perfect amount of health coverage that I needed. Perfect amount that I needed. Exactly what I wanted. And Aetna had to get rid of the whole plan because it didn't meet the new standards because I needed maternity care. You understand how this works? I needed maternity care. So when I lost that, there was no reason for me to stay at the YMCA anymore. Although I loved a lot of the people there and it was good times. It's just I was working just enough there to cover my health premiums. Because, if you don't know, working for yourself is a lot more profitable than spending an hour somewhere and getting $12 out of $12 to $25 out of a $75 personal training ticket. And if somebody splits that into half hours, then you see what I'm talking about here. Talking about going into making $12 at a time? No. The health coverage was worth it. It wasn't then. In either case, why did I start this story? I don't know. Oh, I was talking about President Obama, what I think he's capable of. I think that he's always been way in over his head. He has been a student of Marxism his entire life. If you read anything about his upbringing and where he grew up in the world and the people he grew up around and the people he looks up to and considers mentors and idols and all that, the people who have helped him along the way, it is in his upbringing. He is a Marxist. And, people who think like this have had to surrender reason a long, long time ago because obviously in any kind of Marxist society, the math doesn't add up. And to be able to explain away why you must continue spending what you don't have in hopes of creating the ultimate utopia, which is a failure from the onset because of the unsustainability of the model that you're running. It takes a dupe. You know, it takes a village to raise an, idiot, especially when the village is full of idiots. So this was just the idiot that was that came up at the right time, when we needed just a little bit more to sell to the people. We need a little bit something extra to sell to people. So we marched out the first black major nominee, and history was made. The cruelest hoax that has ever happened so far. In the 21st century, at least, by far, this entire administration has been a cruel, cruel hoax for people who thought that it could have been a healing experience, for someone who thought that, you know, it was just a cruel, cruel hoax to make this be the first. And you want to know what's going to be even a worse cruel hoax? The first female president. Because I'll tell you something, the only thing that Hillary has to do, you know how we always complain about Hillary Clinton hasn't had a press conference since October or December or something ridiculous like that? Well, we have some theories behind that. It has to do with her health. We've talked about the health of Bill, but also that there's also implications of Hillary's health. Well, just today I stumbled upon, it was actually shared by Red Blooded America, I stumbled upon this Paul Joseph Watson video. It's about 5 minutes long, but it's interesting as fuck. So after we get off with Alex, I'm going to put that on. So he's on in 3 minutes. So let me read his article. I co-authored Obama's hostage policy. Okay, this is why we have him on tonight. You're getting talks that you're not getting anywhere else. I promise you that. And I'm going to continue to work hard on making that so. Here's why the Iran cash transfer jeopardized U.S. security. And just so you guys know, Alex Plitzis is a U.S. Army combat veteran, national security professional specializing in counterterrorism and special operations policy. He served in Iraq and Afghanistan, both in uniform and as a Defense Department civilian. You can follow him on Twitter, at Alex Plitzis. Plitzis. Yesterday, it was revealed that the Obama administration sent $400 million in cash, comprised of multiple foreign currencies, to Iran in an unmarked cargo plane hours before four U.S. hostages were released as a part of the Iran nuclear deal. The Obama administration claims that the arrival of the cash was merely coincidental and was the result of a separate negotiation process stemming from a lawsuit Iran filed with the International Court in Hague. While the administration's position that it was a coincidence doesn't pass the common sense test, in the end it doesn't matter because the Iranians believe it was a ransom payment, and that is and that sets a terrible precedent. Okay, this is what we're talking about. Okay, it doesn't matter. The problem is when you act stupidly, and you don't think things through, and you go ahead with plans without consulting people who know. And not getting rid of people who know, to surround yourself with a comfort zone of useful idiots who wear badges, most of them that run departments and wings in the military, who don't even have experience in doing anything. I mean, we have, I think the head of the Air Force, as it's been said time and time again, has never flown a Piper Cub before, let alone a fighter jet. That's a fun one. A year ago, I was chief of sensitive activities for the Assistant Secretary of Defense for Special Operations and Low-Intensity Conflict. In that role, I represented the Secretary of Defense as a member of the White House Hostage Policy Review Team. During our six-month review, the interagency team authored a report to the president that summarized our findings. We subsequently rewrote the presidential executive order and presidential policy directive that govern the U.S. response to hostage situations overseas. Our most important recommendation was that our no concessions policy needed to remain intact, as paying ransoms or other types of concessions would only encourage terrorists and rogue nation states to take more U.S. hostages and therefore put a price on the heads of Americans living and traveling overseas. That position was affirmed by my colleagues at CIA, State Department, Justice Department, National Security Agency, Treasury, and National Counterterrorism Center. For this very reason, senior Justice Department officials objected to the Obama administration making this $400 million payment to the Iranians the day the hostages were being released. At the very least, the timing would give the impression to the Iranians that and the rest of the world that the $400 million payment was ransom, no matter what the U.S. government said, especially since it was delivered just hours before the hostages were put on Swiss Air flight to Germany. And that is exactly what happened. The Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps made public claims that they believe that the payment was ransom for the release of the U.S. hostages. This is dangerous for several reasons. First, the IRGC works closely with Hezbollah, an internationally designated terrorist organization that has killed and kidnapped American citizens overseas and is currently engaged in a fight on the ground in Syria supporting the Assad regime when the U.S. special forces are reportedly embedded with opposing forces. Second, the IRGC pronouncement and the U.S. payment itself did not go unnoticed by U.S. adversaries known to have taken U.S. hostages in the past, ranging from Al-Qaeda to North Korea. There is no doubt that they will now expect some form of monetary payment in the future for the release of U.S. citizens. And in the end, the decision to pay Iran $400 million in cash and deliver it in an unmarked cargo plane hours before the U.S. hostages were released was a terrible mistake and set a very dangerous precedent. The U.S. citizens now will almost certainly face a greater risk of being taken hostage abroad due to irresponsible decision-making. We should work hard to settle disputes with our adversaries without resorting to the use of force when possible, but certainly not at all costs. And what are we living through right now? Everything is violence and fighting back, not at all cost, never fighting back at all costs. That's what's happening socially, at least, culturally. We've been deballed and defanged in very many ways. And because the people who are preaching this type of suicidal behavior, when you think of anybody who acts this way as an individual, who might get bullied or this and that or threatened, I mean, what are you going to do? Are you going to submit your life before somebody? Or are you going to finally one day say that there is a certain line where you do protect yourself? Well, the people who are promoting and spreading this very, very suicidal way of looking at the world and how to dealing with people and ideologies and everything else that comes your way that does not cater to reason and wants you dead for reasons you are never going to be able to relate to, no matter how much you try to explain away. Those people who are creating this reality, creating this narrative, and turning us into these supine, weak animals, they're the people who are in control of the military right now. They're in control of foreign affairs. This is the problem. The Marxists have gotten in. They are up at the highest rungs of society and government. This is not just a ground floor movement anymore. These aren't people meeting in a basement somewhere with secret handshakes that need to be afraid because some HUAC might scoop them up. You think we have a house, anything that resembles a house un-American activities committee? You think we have any elements in government that really care about people who are anti-patriotic? No. That is what the Democratic Party is based on now. The queen spider in the center of the web that controls all the media and controls their friends on the not-so-left leftist party that is the Republicans. Their cohorts, their friends. See, you play the two-party game, and we don't here. Shout out to 1776 United. Republican, Democrat, no. Liberty. Liberty. It's liberty or tyranny. And what are we looking at here? Let's call up Alex. I'm 4 minutes late, but I couldn't stop myself. I just couldn't.
Frank Valbuero.
My good friend, Alex Plitzis. Now, Alex, you had a very, very good bio. That's why we're 4 minutes late. And we put your bio out there. Everybody knows who you are, obviously.
Jesus, I hope you gave up my birth weight at that length.
Of course. What was your birth weight? I'm saying 8 and 7-11. A half. 7'11". 7'11"?
Lucky all the way around.
Oh, I was going to say 8. I don't know what I was. I think I was in the sevens. I was some in there. But in either case, we just read through your article in its entirety. This has been something I really can't wait until the day that you're getting pulled on to major networks. And I hope the day happens, but I don't think that they like to talk to people who talk as straight as you do. So it might just have to be shows like mine for a little while longer. But what you have outlined
here. The good stuff.
Oh, yeah, the good stuff. I mean, reality, the shit that people need to hear. What you have outlined here just goes to show why it doesn't matter what Orwellian doublespeak and lawyer speak. That comes out of the president's mouth or Josh Earnest's mouth at this point. It doesn't matter who and or what who says what at this point, because the optics that they're always so vigilant about is so terrible. Even if it isn't a blatant payoff for hostages, the optics are so terrible that it's having the same effect.
Yeah, and that's really what the problem is at that point. Because at the end of the day, you know, what people see is what matters. So it doesn't matter what you say. If people believe it to be something else, then that's the law of the land. And I think some people today raised some legitimate criticisms when they were critiquing the piece that I wrote and were saying, hey, the Iran-Contra scandal, like there were rumors that there were, you know, seven Americans that were being held by Hezbollah, and that's why we were dealing with Iran, you know, Iran-Contra. And during the Carter administration that they had paid the Iranians to release hostages back then. And yeah, I think there are some legitimate concerns that people raise there. But at the end of the day, the current administration, the current president, in light of the actions ISIS has taken to behead people and take them hostage, ordered a review of our current policy and affirmed that we were not going to pay ransoms for Americans held overseas by terrorist organizations or by rogue nation states. And they affirmed our position as the interagency group that this was something that was going to encourage further acts of hostility and kidnapping by terrorist organizations if we were to pay. So there's no evidence to firmly suggest that we've ever done so to date, minus the hostages in Iran in 79. But the administration said we weren't going to do that. They affirmed that position, and then right the same day we're releasing hostages, 3.5, almost 4 decades worth of arbitration mysteriously gets resolved the same day and hours before the hostages are released, and we fly in $400 million in cash in multiple foreign denominations of currency.
It stinks. It stinks.
Yeah, I mean, and the funny thing is most people would say, like, why was it not in U.S. dollars? Well, the U.S. Congress passed a law that said that we are not going to be able to conduct financial transactions with the Islamic State of Iran because of the actions that they've taken to date and because of the embargo. So we have no diplomatic relationship, nor do we have an economic one for that matter. So to skirt the law, since we can't do any transactions with them in U.S. dollars, the administration decided to procure sums of money in francs and euros and everything else, and then deliver it in an unmarked cargo plane, and then not release the details of that to the U.S. Congress.
Is this criminal?
Hours before the release of hostages, and yet none of that has anything to do with each other.
But is the act itself of doing all that that shifting around of currency and unmarked deliveries delivery planes and all that stuff is any of that illegal? This sounds like a black bag operation.
I think that's probably the best way to describe it, Frank. I think you're spot on in terms of it being illegal. The law is very clear. There are no banking relationships with the Islamic State of Iran. And you don't do transactions with them in U.S. dollars to punish them. But there was no bank, and it wasn't in U.S. dollars.
You know,
it was an unmarked cargo plane that flew in cash with foreign currencies. So they did everything that they could to skirt existing and standing U.S. law.
Okay, so I have to change subjects because this is the first thing that popped into my head. I have to bring up something that our good friend Evan said. It's about Donald Trump, but it ties into the presidency.
Oh God, what now?
It ties into the presidency and Hillary Clinton and whoever might become the next president. And if Donald Trump has anything to do with it, it'll be Hillary Clinton. But let me
that's an accurate statement.
I know. It's really ridiculous. But our friend Evan,
yep.
He wrote this. Let me see here. This is a response to somebody. Evan said, you people act like Trump is going to turn the entire country into a nightmare dystopia with the stroke of a pen and that Clinton will be constrained by checks and balances. It doesn't work like that. How is building a wall worse than, say, facilitating arms shipment to Libya to terrorists in Syria for the purpose of overthrowing Assad? Trump says that he wants to build a national database of Muslims. Clinton's State Department already has. Between the two, here's the real line I really want to bring up. Between the two, I would hope Trump gets elected. At least the presidency would fall under scrutiny. And the reason why I bring that up right now is that if Hillary Clinton is in office and we have the first woman, token character that follows Barack Obama and his lawlessness, and Hillary has already proven to everybody with how she owns the media and everything and public perception, and she will never, ever be convicted of any or indicted for anything she's ever done. Even because she has passed so many tests and jumped over so many hurdles so far, if she becomes president, this type of stuff is going to go on forever. If we actually are, and I can't believe I'm using the word lucky, but if we're lucky enough at this point to have Donald Trump as a president, at least everything he does will be questioned and second-guessed, and there might be checks and balances again.
There will be a Republican majority in the House of Representatives until at least 2032. That much I can promise you. Based on gerrymandering at the state level, where congressional districts are drawn up after every federal census, which takes place every 10 years on the 10-year mark. So by the two after, 2012, the lines are drawn for the next 10 years. The Democrats will never gain control of the House of Representatives. The DNC will tell you that, and the RNC will tell you that. So if Hillary Clinton's elected, she will be scrutinized to holy hell. The difference is in both of these cases, which the American public doesn't understand unless you go back and take a look at the responses to Congress, which is why certain Obama administration officials have been held in contempt of Congress or there's lots of subpoenas. There's something called executive privilege, right? Mm-hmm. Executive communications are privileged. You know, some of these programs are most of these programs are subject to congressional oversight. But certain executive actions and things are considered executive privilege, and therefore those communications do not have to go to the Congress. So to the extent that her people at that point could keep her from really being reined in, yeah, maybe, because there's the Clintons have a lot more people that are in. That really isn't so much dependent upon the candidate that's elected as much as the people that they appoint underneath them. Because in any administration, it's really about the people you surround yourself with. Because the president, you're really only as good as the decisions that you make, and the decisions you make are only as good as the decisions that are brought to you to make.
Yeah,
and the people
far,
that bring those decisions yeah. are the ones you surround yourself with.
See, now, as far as I have questions I can ask you about that as well,
yeah.
because you know a lot more about the generals that have been dismissed, and you know a lot more about the people who actually surround the president in a military fashion as well.
Sure.
So, but what I wanted to ask initially was, so if the House of Representatives is locked up by Republicans at least until 2030s, then you're talking, but that's really doesn't sound like anything that anybody can be relying on, especially if they continue to not be really an opposition party at all. And number two, what the precedents, if we're going to talk about any kind of precedent that has been set by this president,
right.
is that there is
right.
going to be executive and judicial the judicial branch is legislating now. It's interpreting law now. And we talked about the danger of losing the Supreme Court for a couple of generations.
Mm-hmm.
What does it matter if
yep.
there is one House of Congress that is locked up by a supposed opposition party if all this stuff that is going to be done through executive fiat is going to be upheld by courts?
So you're 100% right in your statement and 100% right in your question. And I was quite literally answering just the literal question that you asked about the ability for Congress to check the president at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Congress will remain, at least the Republican side of the House will remain in control for 2030. The Senate will swing back and forth like a clock pendulum, like a banana republic, depending on how the mood of the country goes in light of our politics at the moment. But with the judiciary, yeah, and that's the unique part that most people really haven't focused and understand. So I think that's probably one of the more pressing questions that the mainstream press hasn't spent enough time focusing on. So I appreciate you asking that, and I really wish others would and would ask of people who are more, definitely more important, but are, who are in positions of power to answer. So there is no, if you look at the Constitution, the Supreme Court, like if you ask how many people are supposed to be on the Supreme Court, do you know how many are there by the Constitution?
None, I don't think, right?
Because just one.
One?
The Constitution says there'll be a Supreme Court and there'll be a Chief Justice. So by the Constitution, since there has to be a Chief Justice, there has to be at least one, because somebody has to play the role of Chief Justice. But other than that, the figure of nine that we've arrived on is totally based on historical precedent.
Yeah, I was going to say,
the Constitution is also based on historical precedent.
It started off
as three, correct? Say again?
It started off as three. I know that it has grown over the years.
Yes, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's grown over the years, and at some points there were people trying to expand the court to dilute it down when they couldn't get people in their favor. But it settled at nine, and that's where we are, and that's where we're going to be.
Okay.
And, there's an immense amount of power that's there. There's a sensitivity at the moment because John Roberts is a very bright man and understands the court should really be this balanced institution and never wants it to be seen as a partisan branch of government, no matter how we constantly view them as being split between the parties of their nominators, for that matter, since they were nominees who were then confirmed. They do really have the ability to change the face of this country and the way that we live as a society, from gun rights to abortion to education to affirmative action to freedom of speech. Any one of those issues and constitutional rights can be turned on its head or given more strength in terms of its legal power with the whip of a pen by nine people. And I think people seriously underestimate that because in this case, when we're talking about American jurisprudence, those decisions establish precedent. And part of our legal tradition is that unless you're given good cause, that legal precedent stands. So those decisions could have effects not only for us right now, but for generations to come.
Well,
so you probably asked the most pressing question of the entire election that I have yet to hear come from the mouth and the manner in which you phrased it from any of the mainstream press.
Well, hey, it's the thing that concerns me the most. I don't know. It's like, what do these houses, our representation, you know, we're pretty much disenfranchised by it. And it's just very, very concerning. It's very concerning. Oh, let me ask you one follow-up question, because I know there's a lot of different types of thoughts on this. But what are the reasons that some people who are constitution-minded and very, very reverent of the Constitution, why would some people oppose term limits for the judiciary?
So the reason people would oppose term limits to the judiciary. So in order for the judiciary to be impartial, they were given lifetime appointments. Because if you look at like the FBI director, after J. Edgar Hoover was given too much authority and he abused it, they turned that position to a 10-year position. If you look at the Federal Reserve or some of the others, you get a 10-year position and you could be reappointed. Think about if you were like super conservative or super liberal in your decision making and then you're up for your 10-year appointment. It's up to a president at that point, if we're talking at a federal position where the president has the nominating authority and the Senate has the right to give their consent and consideration as to whether or not to reappoint you to that position. So if you didn't rule in a manner that was favorable to the party of the current sitting president, you would run the risk of not being renominated and then reappointed to that position. So if you had somebody who was really career-oriented or somebody who really wanted that job or enjoyed the prestige and the power of being one of the nine people who decide the fate of our body of laws and really our society and culture, you could be potentially weak as a person and then say, oh, President Obama's in office right now. I'm going to make sure all my decisions are liberal.
Right.
Previous administration, President Bush is in office. I'm going to make sure that all of my rulings lean a little bit more towards the conservative side.
Right.
So you could have the potential for people to really skew their rulings towards whoever happens to be in office at the time with the hopes of getting another appointment. When you really want, especially, if we really want to talk about, equal justice under the law, somebody who's completely impartial. And you can't have that if you run the risk of having to be reappointed by a politician who belongs to one political party or another.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll put it to you this way. So if you look at the court system right now, if you were to go to court and you didn't speak English, like your last name is Valbiro, so if your family's Italian, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, so if you didn't speak, you know, Italian-American, so if you, a couple generations back, you got busted for whatever, or you got a traffic or speeding violation, and you had to go to court, and you were, you know, an immigrant to this country, and you didn't speak the language, regardless of what your financial status was, you have a right under the law where the court will appoint an interpreter to literally interpret your words verbatim to the court to make sure that you get a fair hearing. Do you know who pays for that?
Who?
It's not the court system.
The taxpayer?
It's the state. It's the state. The taxpayer pays for it separate from the court system. Because if the court system paid for it, it would be that person could be technically skewed, if you think about it, to provide an interpretation that was in favor of the court system.
Gotcha. Oh,
you know,
see, I didn't even know about this.
The same thing as if a defense attorney paid for the interpreter. That interpreter might say whatever they wanted to say that would benefit the interpreter. And the court, who would know better? Because nobody else speaks that foreign language.
See, it's amazing.
So for that reason, for impartiality, that's always been an independent function.
It's really, really interesting to hear things like this, things I never heard before, but little fail-safes and caveats that are really just worked into the fabric of the legal system. You know, you could say what you want about it being circumvented and broken, but, I mean, it really is the best one in the world. You know, or at
and
least
you know
it tries to be, at least.
Go ahead, Frank. Sorry.
No, go ahead. Your interpreter.
Yeah, so my interpreter, when he finally got to the United States a couple of months ago, you know, he was in tears when he got here, and he said to me that, you know, when you first told me, Alex, that we filed suit on my behalf against the federal government of the United States, I never thought we were actually going to win. Because in Iraq, if you were to ever sue the Iraqi government, they would send a hit squad to your house. Because that's what happened. You don't sue a minister in Iraq. Like, those things don't happen. But when we won the lawsuit, where it was a settlement out of court where the State Department looked like they were going to lose, it was my Iraqi interpreter, who was dirt poor, who was a foreign citizen living in a different country, who defeated John Kerry, a sitting Secretary of State, by a U.S. federal judge and was awarded citizenship. And he told me, never in a million years did I ever think that another country of which I was not a citizen, even though he served as an interpreter and you know, walked alongside me on combat missions, would side with some poor Arab Muslim immigrant in a different country against their own government. And he literally broke down in tears, and he told me, that's what I told my kid is what America stands for, and that's why we want to immigrate there. And it literally broke my heart. I was there, like, in tears from listening to this when I picked him up at JFK.
But you know what? That's a great story, man. That really is. I'm glad that we have it recorded on the show. That's a great story to listen to. You know,
and he's a wonderful human being, and I go to bat for him any day of the week.
Well, you are not a bad guy at all yourself there, Alex, and thank you so much for joining us once again.
Thanks, Frank. It was a good one.
So once again, whenever you want to come by, dude, the door is open. We can have it in-studio session soon.
Looking forward to it.
All right, man.
Brother. Good to talk to you in the audience.
Yes, and great work with this article. Take care.
You too. Thanks.
Bye-bye. Man, oh, man. All right, guys, we're going to go on a really quick break. But as we go on a break, I'm going to leave you with something a little bit different. It's going to be like a little bit of a history lesson. This one is going to be... Let me see here. Hold on a second. I'm trying to look at... Oh, here you go. A little socialism story. And this is all. Thank you so much, Red-Blooded America, for sharing little tidbits like this throughout the day. Hold on a second. Just leaving you guys with this one. All right, we'll be right back. Be quiet, Devin.
To keep you is no benefit. To destroy you is no loss. In the 1950s, students started gathering in Paris. They were reading Karl Marx. They were forming book clubs. They were trying to come up with a better version of society, one that moved away from the division of labor, one that moved away from the capitalism in the big cities that they so despised. One student actually wrote a dissertation on how you would return to the agrarian society that they all dreamed of. One of those students would change his name to Pol Pot. He and his colleagues formed a new political party, a takeover in Cambodia. They called themselves Khmer Rouge. They proceeded in 1975 to implement these lofty ideas. They started herding people out of the cities into the farmlands, forcing people that had no idea how to farm to work the land. Some people were executed because they refused to do so. Other people died in the fields. They were called the killing fields. And many, many more people simply starved because the new model did not work. In Cambodia, under Pol Pot and the Khmer Rouge, one out of four people in that country died in less than 4 years. Think about that. Think about one in four members of your family dying because of an experiment. Think about one in four people in your community slaughtered because of a bad idea. This is socialism in practice. Socialism kills.
Bulletproof has always been about identifying and taking advantage of every single thing that makes people perform better. When you drink it, you just don't care about food. No cravings, no hunger for 4 to 6 hours, and you feel a kind of mental clarity that you probably haven't felt in years.
Have you heard of Bulletproof coffee? I tried it today. I feel pretty good.
Entertainment Network on ZenLive.tv.
Okay, back. We are back. Hope you guys enjoyed that heartwarming little tidbit of history. But you know what? You have to know this stuff. You have to know this stuff. You have to know where the really good ideas take everybody. Take you to bad places sometimes. You know? You know? You ever get your rocks off to someone you thought would probably be fun to hook up with in real life, but you feel the post-sex regret even after it's just jerking off? Telling you, masturbation is not so much of a bad thing if you do it moderately. It can get you out of a lot of bad situations. You know that regret after sex when you know that you've done something wrong with the wrong person? It's there. It's there after you. Matt, you ever have that? You get your rocks off before you go into a shower, and you try somebody else out for size, and you go immediately afterwards. Whoa! Thank God that didn't really happen.
Hold on.
Go ahead. Say that.
Once or twice, but then I also went through with it, and after all, I'm like, damn, I should have just fucking jerked off.
Yeah, it's all. Yeah, you can. The regret is there. You got all the tools you need. All the tools you need for the job. So let's get to a few things here. Hillary Clinton. Now, her health has been an issue for a while now. Now, here is a Paul Joseph Watson video that I want to play a little bit, because this is actually kind of freaky. Now, we talked about her coughing fits. We talked about her clearing her throat. And, you know, people are pointing out this hole in her tongue now. Something going on. Some people think that she has some kind of a throat cancer or something like that.
It's just her tongue is just split because she's a reptilian, so she's got the snake tongue.
Yeah, but this is something different. And she's doing all very weird, like, watch this shit. Seriously, okay? Everybody put your conspiracy caps on. This is not time for party politics, okay? This is about whether or not reptilians are ruling the Earth.
Reason behind Hillary Clinton's bizarre behavior in recent weeks. Weird seizures, psychotic facial tics, over-exaggerated reactions, coughing fits, strange lesions on her tongue. Is Hillary on the verge of a mental breakdown due to stress, or are her strange outbursts linked to a medical condition? Is Clinton suffering from actual brain damage, Or are these odd manifestations just an expression of some kind of narcissistic personality disorder? I talked privately with psychologists and psychiatrists to try and answer this question, and here's what they told me. We know Hillary fainted and hit her head back in 2012, leading to a blood clot in her brain. In almost half of sufferers, this leads to side effects and neurological issues. According to neurologist Dr. Daniel Kasiche, Hillary has post-concussion syndrome and cannot tolerate stress-inducing environments. Experts told me that this footage likely shows Hillary having a mild Jacksonian type of seizure caused by a side effect of the blood clot. Notice how shocked the reporter is by her behavior.
It's true.
How Hillary tries to turn it into a joke, but then continues having the seizure. Notice how it was triggered by several different people talking to her at once, which is a known cause of seizures. Is this why Hillary refuses...
I can relate to that. You know who puts me in a position like that all the time? Mike May. Where I'm having a conversation and he's having a full-blown conversation with me in my periphery. Okay, I can, like, to the side of me, and I have to just... I have to keep shooting my eyes over to him so he knows I'm kind of listening sometimes. Not that I don't listen to Mike May when he speaks. It's just that he has a tendency to add to an already confusing situation. I should say that.
To give press conferences. We see similar traits in this footage. The crazy eye movements.
Wow!
The overreaction to external stimuli.
Wow!
The weird elongated bathroom break in the middle of a televised debate, which insiders said was a flare-up of problems from her brain injury.
And do we believe Secretary Clinton will be coming around the corner any minute?
Reports that she can barely stand up after giving a speech. The coughing fits, which is yet another side effect of strokes.
Oh.
Difficulty swallowing. Choking, a garbled voice, again, all side effects of strokes. Guess what else is a side effect of strokes? Spontaneous outbursts of laughter that go on for longer than is socially comfortable.
I know Bernie Sanders said that, quote, the American people are sick and tired of hearing about your damn emails. But there are a lot of people who are not.
Well.
including FBI officials.
Some aspects of Hillary's freakish behavior could be explained by the blood clot, but others could be a manifestation of her notoriously unstable personality.
No, I think it's mostly that. We're not going to go through the rest of the 3 minutes there. But I don't know. That's definitely, there's something there that gets added into it. See, this is the type of news I really like sometimes because it makes me feel like, oh man, there are people in charge that are not only out for very nefarious purposes, but they might be mentally deranged. And if they are, holy shit. This is some scary stuff. And I was telling Gypsy before that every once in a while, if I'm out on the back porch or something, I'm reading something, I'm on the road, every once in a while I'll think, you know, I'm waiting for it. The day that you just see a big flash in the distance, a nuclear bomb went off somewhere. You know, watch Terminator 2 way too many times.
Just try and seek refuge.
Where?
There's a spot in my house. It's underground. In my basement. I'm serious. There's an area that leads underground.
At that point, listen, if bombs are going to start getting dropped, let the first one drop on me. Seriously. I don't want to know about it. Don't want to know about anything. Just let it happen. It wasn't our fault. Wasn't our fault. What's going on, everybody, in the chat room? I want to say hello to everybody again. Oh, you know what I wanted to show you guys? I wanted to actually give you guys a link to my Patreon. It's the next thing. So if you go to patreon.com/quitefrankly, you'll see it. You know, pass that on to any business owner of yours that you think might want to take part in one of the three business packages I've put out there. Any kind of support for the show would be fantastic. Only because I want to keep doing this. That'd be awesome if this show had enough financial backers one day so that we can also fund trips. Like, I would really, really love to have some kind of podcasting side or documentation side to that whole idea that we had of going to Europe, our first trip to Europe, starting in London, crossing the channel, and following the Allied advance. You know, that would be awesome to hit up all those places and you know, document it in some way, make it part of the show. So it's history, it's a little bit of a, hey, look, we're globetrotting now. That'd be awesome. But I dream. What's there else to do but dream? Am I right? Am I right or am I right? So Patreon, Patreon.com/ quite frankly. Check that out. I put all that, why is quite frankly on Patreon? I put some words down there. And I'm going to make an intro video for that too soon. It'll be very, very exciting. Everybody's going to go nuts for it. People are just going to go ape shit for it. There's going to be very few people that won't be talking about how amazing it is. You'll get a call from your grandparents, your some kind of a distant cousin that you haven't talked about. Hey, you ever see this guy? This amazing video he put together for his Patreon. I'll have, in 6 months from now, that'll be a $25 Patreon. Which is why I was reluctant to do it in the first place. So it got around to Evan's talk about Trump at least being under scrutiny. I have two pieces of history here that I want to talk about, but tomorrow's Friday, so maybe then. A Chinese war in California. I thought that was really cool. A gang war of the Old West, but with Chinese immigrants. That's a really cool story there. And, of course, I wanted to do this earlier on in the week, but 70 years ago this week, World War II vets who took up arms against corrupt cops and ran them out of town. That's a really amazing story, too. It's an overall police state story. It's a story about how we've been deballed. Crowd cheers, Clinton call to raise taxes on the middle class. Listen to this. Listen to this. So the Harridan comes out, and she says this to a group of clapping SEALs who don't understand that they're cheering on their own demise.
Because while Warren is standing up for a fairer tax code, Trump wants...
Talking about Warren Buffett, who's sitting there like an old coffee cake.
...wants to cut taxes for the super rich. Well, we're not going there, my friends. I'm telling you right now, we're going to write fairer rules for the middle class, and we aren't going to raise taxes on the middle class.
There you go. Now, was it a slip of the tongue? Was it Freudian? Well, perhaps. Perhaps, but not really. The real question is, did she intend to tell us that? And that is obviously not. Okay? But what we do know is that there is absolutely no way that the super rich, the people that you think that you're milking for all this craziness, is really going to be able to be touched. And they don't. They won't be touched. In fact, another great video pick from Red-Blooded America, a Bill Whittle video that I'm going to leave you guys with after we sign off. So after I sign off, I'm going to put this video on. It's a couple minutes long. Hold on, let me see here. Where is it?
Hi, everybody.
It's 9 minutes long. That's not going to be that much of a... You know what? It's 7:54. I'm going to get off right now. And this is going to be a precursor to what we talk about in the first 20 minutes of tomorrow's show. So we'll start off why the rich will never be taxed from the standpoint of just the technicality of it. What they do with their money, where their money comes from, and why it's not going to be touched. And then, of course, from the propaganda side of it. Why the political elite need the super rich. What that money means. They are part of the super rich. Where they get their speaking fees from. Of course, Hillary Clinton, we talked about it, over $600,000 from Goldman Sachs. You think that she was talking to them about how she was going to regulate them and how we're all just going to have to get along? Absolutely not. Okay, so these are buzzwords. These are market tested speeches. They are written in a scientific manner. There's no feeling there. It's purely manipulative. The only people who are going to feel the brunt of this is the middle class. We're going to have to shoulder more of the weight. Things are going to get worse. That's just it. And you want to know why people say tax cuts cost too much money? Because they've already relegated themselves to, they've already said right off the bat, we're not cutting spending. The only reason why cutting taxes on people, no matter what class they're in, would ever increase the debt is because you've already, from the onset, agreed you're not going to cut the spending. So that's the hilarity of the whole thing. But we'll talk about more of that tomorrow. And since I want to play this video and it's 9 minutes long, 7:55, I'm just going to start a little bit of this right now and leave you guys with it so you have at least 5 minutes to watch this 9-minute video. Talk to you guys soon and see you tomorrow. If you want to watch the full thing on your own, search it on YouTube. It's called Eat the Rich. It's by Bill Whittle. Okay? I'm going to screen capture this. I'm going to get off the air. Thank you, Alex Plissis, for joining us. Thank you, Matt, for being with us. And as soon as the end logo pops up and it's all over, I'll play the video. So stick around.